Hello, I'm Mr. Movies of the Famous Film. Hello, I'm Mr. Movies of the Famous Film Twitter.com, and this is the Mr. Movies Podcast.
I don't mean to make you feel cornered. It's just I don't like this guy over here pitching this solely as a Christmas movie. There's so much more to it than just like some stupid piece of shit meme.
Actually, you'll find that this movie does fit the criteria for Christmas movie and is the most entertaining lens that you could perhaps peruse its wares through.
I get one night a month to spend some time with my friends, and they all abandoned me, so now I want to explain a movie to this poor guy that we have cornered over here, and I always end up with a Reddit moderator.
I think that you are gradually undermining the merits that it takes to curate a feed of people as intellectually adventurous as your average Redditor.
Fuck. What do you even say to that? Don't go. Alright, hear me out. I'm telling you that Die Hard is so much better of a movie than just deserving to be like some Christmas movie meme. It really is good, it really is fun, and I think it warrants some sort of look into, right? This movie's a really strange prophetic vision of how America would treat the threat of international crime in the year 1988. It's the tail end of 80s action movies, and I just don't get why you have to insist that this is the only dimension to it.
Well, me thinks that we should perhaps have a friendly bit of debate. Maybe we could wager some Reddit gold over it. Reddit gold? Like the new Reddit gold with the emojis? We are going to wager some Reddit gold to see if this movie... I'm not exactly sure what accent this is anymore. This is how Redditors sound in my head. I'll wager you some Reddit gold that at the end of this he'll think of Die Hard not as a great, one of the last great 80s action movies, but instead an epic internet meme Christmas movie.
This is Die Hard. This movie's incredible. Each year, I watch this movie right around Christmas time. No, don't get any ideas. And there's a reason why I watch this movie once a year, and it's because it's one of the best action movies I've ever seen. This movie's a ton of fun. It toes a line between ridiculous and, like, a gritty, real action heist film. I would say that this movie falls smack dab in between Michael Mann's Heat and John Woo's Face Off, if that's a good comparison. You know, Heat being a movie where they, like, literally counted the number of shots that people were doing and would show you, them reloading. At no point in that movie is there any sort of, plot hole as to, oh, this person shot this many rounds. And, you know, like, they, like, infinitely are firing guns, and, this is just one of those shitty action movies. And it's a very, very methodically planned out action movie. And then you counteract this with John Woo's Face Off, which is the exact opposite. John Woo's Face Off is not intended to be a gritty, real, look at violence in like American media. It's fun. It's a movie with explosions. It's a movie with a priest dual-wielding, shooting golden guns at a man who's running away. There's a lot of diving. There's a lot of explosions. It's a ton of fun. They say the title of the movie 100 different times. And in between that, you end up with a movie like Die Hard, which is not necessarily the most realistic thing. There's a ton of plot armor around our main character. But at the same time, the movie explicitly states why John McClane is so unkillable. And I think that it is an incredibly interesting argument to make in a movie that has completely and totally incoherent politics. Which is really funny because 80s action movies usually are pretty clear about who the enemy is. And it almost always is the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union's coming to destroy America. And luckily for me, I happen to be in the Navy and have access to a submarine that has missiles and goodbye, Mr. Gorbachev. But this movie's wild. It shows us a look into international crime that we just, like, don't see anymore in movies. The biggest thing being that, like, in this movie, they even use the term specifically terrorists throughout it, which I feel like they genuinely earned that title. That title's thrown around kind of willy-nilly, but I mean, in this instance, you could absolutely say, no, those are terrorists. We're all cool here. Those are terrorists. And what's funny about it is, like, seeing international crime portrayed as a German thing, as opposed to now where they're just, that's nondescript Muslim, that's nondescript brown person, and they are terrorists because they have guns. Like, this movie's very, very clear in the fact that they are Germans. And, I don't know, this movie coming out before 9/11 obviously doesn't give them the wide-open door that a lot of directors took, where they're like, ooh, we could make a lot of money off of Americans being outright Islamophobic and racially profiling every single fucking Muslim and immigrant that they could physically find in, like, a 10-mile radius. They didn't have that excuse, so what they're left with is a truly interesting story about the coolest type of movie that there is, which is a bank heist. I mean, that's what this is. It's a big bank heist movie. And all of us have thought about robbing a bank and getting away with it before. In this movie, I mean, the stakes are extremely clear. The stakes are all of us can walk out of here with $600 million liquid cash that can all turn 20% returns, which is unbelievably high amounts of money, and it makes sense why all of them were so excited to pull this off. I'd argue that Die Hard falls into a genre of film that would be the proto-superhero movie. That specifically being, like, it's like a superhero movie before we became hostages to Gen X and Gen X's media consumption habits. You know, like their lust for comic book movies, their insistence on taking the stuff they grew up with as children as being not only globally admired but gritty and worth looking at. And I don't know, this movie is so unbelievably fun. And if this is what superhero movies actually were, you know, it's like, yes, it's an unkillable action hero who saves the girl. That's every single superhero movie, roughly. But I don't know what it is about Die Hard. It's a level of craftsmanship to it. It's a unique glance into a situation that we've all imagined being on the bad side. Not necessarily, like, the bad side in the way where people are being shot in the head, but more the bad side of, I want to rob one of the most successful companies in the world and then retire to a beach somewhere and completely get away with it. And I think that this genre norm that we have that just kind of gets, like, turned on its head, where it's like, oh man, the heist, those are the people that are supposed to be the good guys, that's the fun stuff. And this movie not only makes them bad, but also gives them, like, very, very realistic goals with that money. And so many of these movies are just like, oh, they're just general diamonds. Or, you know, like the Hitchcock method. Ah, it's a diamond. You know, they're going in for the diamonds. And it's because whenever you write suspense, you don't care about what they want. It's just the fact that they want it. And I can agree with that to like a time, like a certain amount of time, but then eventually you get caught up on like, all right, but what the fuck are you going to do with a bag full of diamonds? With this one, what it was it's $600 million worth of negotiable bonds or something like that. It's essentially like, it's like liquid cash. It'd be the equivalent of just finding $600 million just piled up. I mean, it's fantastic. And this movie is so good that you actually root for the cop to stop the heist from happening. That's how good Die Hard is. So I think now's no better of a time than to just kind of walk through Die Hard. And I guess that the premise of this episode is have a debate with the moderator for Die Hard is a Christmas Movie, the subreddit. Yep. It's midnight. I don't know what I'm doing. This movie starts out on a plane, and our sweet hero, our weirdly haired Bruce Willis, is coming off of a plane, and he has some flight anxiety. This is where a businessman next to him tells him that the best way to unwind from air travel is to take off your shoes and socks and curl up your toes like fists. Which apparently isn't fetish stuff. It's foreshadowing, ultimately. But which makes it a great movie. And doesn't need to be lumped into some awful meme.
Oh yeah? Well, it's a Christmas movie because the next scene is at his wife's work at Nakatomi Plaza. And it's Christmas. It's a Christmas party. Second of all, a call from home comes in, and it turns out that these children, these vermin that I read about on r/childfree, have been told not to snoop through their presents. A holiday staple, and I would argue, a hallmark of Christmas movie cinema.
Alright. John McClane gets picked up from the airport. And this is how I know this is a genuinely great film, is that it toys with these genre norms. Like, it's not an explicit comedy, and it's not a fervently very serious, like, Heat action thriller. It relies on a lot of fun visual comedy points to suck you in, to get you ready for the ride, I guess you could say. Like how he gets picked up by Argyle, one of the all-time great side characters from cinema, who's a limo driver, who used to be a cab driver. Who, like, just got into this business, so he's slick, there's kind of like a playboyish quality to him, and both of them have never been in a limo before. So, him not knowing what to do, John McClane puts his giant teddy bear in the back and decides to ride shotgun.
Yes, but methinks you fell into a bit of a trap. As I perused your argument, I realized you very cleverly omitted what song he put on his cassette tape, and I'll hand you 2 Reddit gold if you can name the track, and an extra emoji gold if you can tell me the artist.
It's Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. I mean, this song was huge. It's been a hit for like 35 years at this point, I think.
But an ad hominem in your straw man, he says, "Do you have any Christmas music?" And Argyle shouts back, "This is Christmas music. A point in the win column. I'll have you know I'm keeping tally."
I don't know how long I'm gonna keep this bit going on. When I was writing it, I was like, this is really good. Man, this is awesome. And now that it's midnight and I'm on sober mind, I'm realizing this may not have the same comedic appeal it had as I was writing it, and let's just hope it makes it into the edit.
Like I said, you're very fast, Argyle.
You mind if we hear some tunes?
Hey, that'll work. You got any Christmas music?
This is Christmas music.
This is kind of a sad movie, too. They don't beat you over the head with information, like shouting it at you, like, John McClane, but you're divorced. Why are you going to L.A. if you are essentially divorced? They show it to you. Like when John looks for his wife's name in the directory of employees and sees that she doesn't go by McClane anymore. She goes by her maiden name, Gennaro, instead. You know, it gets sad learning this way, especially if you went out of your way to fly from New York City to L.A., the only two cities in America, according to Hollywood.
May I take over by saying John McClane goes up the elevator, and what does he see? Ah, geez, Rick, it's a Christmas party. Do any of you watch Rick and Morty?
Focus, please. Remember the cokehead hotshot who's always flirting with John McClane's, I'm assuming, soon-to-be ex-wife? It's important to establish this for two reasons. One, it explains him. The other is that every single thing in this movie comes with repercussions, or at least is foreshadowing to a scene that will happen in the climax, or one of the many climaxes of the movie. His coke habit will come into play later. And it even leads to an odd sexual tension in the room, because John's wife comes in the room and sees him standing there. Two supposed love interests in one room is a lot for a gal to handle, and things naturally heat up because of it. Mainly in the way of them wanting to stay in the same house together, because John doesn't have a hotel, but then blowing it up right in his face because he brought up the last name thing. And I gotta be honest with you, who gives a shit about if your wife takes your last name or not, or like reverts? Like, my wife didn't take mine. Literally, who care? It's her name. Grow up! Oh, and all of a sudden, we get some bad guys in Nakatomi Plaza. A real ragtag group of folks of all different backgrounds. And man, they be shooting people with silenced pistols. Playfully, too. Like, it's genuinely disturbing when you think about how much of a game it's treated to, double foot kick a guy after he's been shot right in the center of his forehead. Like, practically point blank. Like, it was such a personal killing. Why are you a child, like, on a jungle gym? Fucking freak.
So Kareem rebounds, right? Feeds Worthy on the break, over to AC, to Magic, then back to Worthy, right? Boom! 2 points. We're in.
We also get introduced to one of the best bad guys in film history in Hans Gruber, played by Alan Rickman, you know, from
Harry Potter, which I want to add is also a slew of Christmas movies. You see, as the resident Gen X pop culture guru, I have quite a lot to say about this. Here, let me show you on my graphic tee underneath this light-up sweater. It's one of those purposely made ugly sweaters that I bought. I got it for $47 from sharkrobot.com. You see, it's got the Death Star and Deadpool on it, and it says...
After sabotaging their communication systems, the German heist crew start to open fire on the Christmas party ceiling. But I'm shocked this movie exists pre-9/11. I mean, this seems like a very pro-Department of Homeland Security movie, doesn't it? Like, sub out the Germans with Iraqis, and you have a lot of the panic people felt right before we invaded Iraq and committed the war crime of the century. It's just odd knowing that these mass shooting fears were here, because I'm pretty sure that Columbine hadn't even happened yet. And it makes me wonder how long these mass shooting fears have existed culturally in America, or if this truly was just a big reach by the director. And then we get stakes! It turns out, at Nakatomi Plaza, the stand-in for neoliberal global hegemony, I imagine, they have $640 million in negotiable bearer bonds locked in a big ol' safe. This is before computers just made pretend money, and instead they relied on special pieces of paper to make pretend money. But it sticks, and it's timeless, because heist movies are everyone's guilty pleasure. They're amazing. We can all relate to this. Like, robbing a global corporation? Come on now.
a fine juxtaposition, as Santa always gives, but you fantasize about only taking.
A pretty great glimpse into the modern police psyche is in the next scene, where John does his first murder. He corners this guy and, you know, points a gun at his head. The guy goes, "Oh yeah? You're a policeman. You can't hurt me. There's rules for policemen." Which, first, hilarious. That has never been the case. Second, he responds with, "Yeah, that's what my chief keeps telling me." And we're supposed to cheer for this guy? Come on.
Drop it, dickhead. It's the police.
You won't hurt me.
Oh, yeah? Why not?
Because you're a policeman. There are rules for policemen.
Yeah. That's what my captain keeps telling me.
After brutally murdering him with a neck snap, John McClane dresses up the dead body like Santa Claus, writing in blood, "Now I have a machine gun, ho ho ho." This is a Christmas movie. If it wasn't, this scene wouldn't be here, would it? I have built my entire personality around insisting that this is a Christmas movie because I'm the fun guy at the office. The guy who wears fun socks and says things like, "Happy Friday Eve on a Thursday at 2 p.m.
This kicks off what I call most of the movie. And I mean, what all do you want from an action movie from 1988? This was the tail end of action, 80s action movies, I mean. And like any good 80s action movie, we get two things. Classic one-liners and fucking stakes being raised. We get both of these when John makes his way to the roof and lets out an emergency call, saying that there are six terrorists killing hostages, and they say, "Eh, sounds like a job for 911, not the police, which we are." And buddy, the police haven't changed. Like, it's so crazy how this movie endorses both police being horrifically incompetent and also the police not being allowed to shoot whoever they want. But it's an 80s action movie, so incoherent politics are part of the whole package. But we do get this great line out of him where it's something like, "This sounds like an emergency." And he's like, "No shit, does it sound like I'm ordering a fucking pizza?" And just, mwah! It's good writing. It's good writing.
It's the same address as that fire signal.
I'll handle it.
Attention, whoever you are, this channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
No fucking shit, lady! Do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
So much happens that's just visual action in this movie. You know, it's really great for an audio format. But luckily, we get some one-liners. Like the TV dinner line.
"Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs."
"I know what a TV dinner feels like."
Which I really never got why this was so popular. Is the joke that TV dinners make you shit yourself? Do TV dinners even exist anymore? But this movie evolves. What is just mindless action becomes an exciting thriller to just get a cop's attention. You see, this now isn't a problem. Cops just harass whoever they want whenever they feel like it. And the juxtaposition of this fantasy world where the police don't just meddle with John McClane shooting a guy to death in the dick is palpable. It's really, really fun filmmaking is what I'm getting at. The movie explicitly argues that, like, the police can't do what they want to do, and that's a bad thing. But also, the police shouldn't be able to do what they want to do, because that would be a bad thing. It's incoherent. And we love it.
But perhaps I can submit a subtle inquiry. What song was the officer humming as he walked back to his car? It was "Let It Snow," a famed Christmas tune that is very easy to hum. Furthermore,
this is immediately interrupted by a dead body being thrown on the hood of his car from several floors up, then a machine gun aerating his car. I don't think this argument's going well for you.
"Hey,
Lincoln 30 to dispatch.
8L30, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a wild goose chase over here at Nakatomi Plaza. Everything here is okay. Over. But nobody has no guts to go. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Man, God damn it, fingers ain't crying!
Welcome to the party, pal!
Hans Gruber had a really good line after John announces the fact that he's killed like half of the crew, and Hans talks about how John is an American who watched too many movies as a child and believes himself to be a John Wayne or Rambo, which is like exactly what I've talked about in regards to American suburban culture. Like, it really is this hollow. It's a shame that film is the only place you really find meaning in life, and it's by, you know, consuming media that have main characters who look like us and have life goals that sound like anything that has a purpose, good or bad, because we're all cogs in a machine that's grinding us down to make GDP as close to 3% as physically possible. Sorry, I mean, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Yay!
You have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequin shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It really is a great line, though. I mean, it speaks to, like, that American pathology of punishment via shooting. Because, like, all of the heroes of early cinema were these overtly masculine types who just had a gun and a man that they needed killed, or the guy in town's causing trouble. And there was never any, like, oh, you know, this guy was so good because he could, you know, work the system or whatever. It was always, he's going to go into town and kill every single person who works with this guy and then get the girl. I mean, that's very much like an American mentality. All of our movies were built on these tropes, and it makes sense that the guys who ended up writing a lot of movies that were heavily influenced by this would take a lot of this stuff to heart. I mean, the 80s action movie is probably a direct result of people watching a ton of these old westerns growing up. You know, oh, this guy's unkillable and he has a gun. Now, what if he did that with neon lights and a car that talked to him? You know, it's not a stretch, and I think that it's a great point in a movie full of very good points, like robbing the neoliberal global hegemony example of Nakatomi Plaza. When the deputy of police shows up, it kicks off a new bit of conflict between the well-meaning officer and the feds. And man, do they make cop management look as stupid as physically possible here? The politics of this movie makes no sense, with how it's perfectly pro and anti-cop at the same time. But the most depressing thing is how the police tech feels so weak compared to what we suffer through now. Like, the cops have a lone RV, and that's a holy shit moment. But now, like, school officers have tanks. This movie feels so out of date because the police are hamstrung for equipment when dealing with international terrorists in, like, a financial building. But now it's over 50% of most city budgets. Like, it's always cool knowing you live in a worse dystopia than the fiction you're trying to escape what you're in is depicting. And remember the cokehead from earlier? Well, they established this for a reason. His whole mantra is the weird salesman coked out behavior, and to no one's surprise, he sells out John McClane to try to sleep with his wife, I'm assuming. He tries his hardest to negotiate something out and immediately gets himself shot and killed. This is corporate sales, buddy, and I thrive off of it being shown this raw.
Hans, this shithead does not know what kind of man you are, but I do. Listen.
Good, then you'll give us what we want and save your friend's life. You're not part of this equation this time you realize that.
Hey, what am I, method actor Hans?
Babe, put away the gun. This is radio, not television.
Hans, this asshole is not my friend. I just met him tonight. I don't know him. Jesus Christ, Ellis, these people are going to kill you. Tell them you don't know me.
John, how can you say that after all these years, huh?
John.
One thing that's been a brainworm forever for me is the next scene, where they show a news report that defines the weird dependency that hostages and their kidnappers build with each other, and they call it Helsinki Syndrome. Like, I literally always have to correct myself in my head, you know, it's like, oh no, it's Stockholm, because the scene is so engraved in my brain. Which is really nice, because it gets juxtaposed with the next scene, which isn't engraved in my brain at all, where Hans goes looking for John and then pretends to be a hostage? Like, he pretends to be like a little bitch? And every time I see this scene, I forget about it, then get amazed that it happened. Like, I don't know what it is. My brain literally won't hold on to the memory. I don't know why. Honestly, because it's like they both knew each other better than the movie lets on? I'm literally trying to remember it right now, but it's fading. Where am I?
You were arguing that this is a Christmas movie.
Nope. No. Definitely wasn't doing that. I feel like I said something about shoot the glass and cut his feet?
Have you considered subscribing to my r/copsinfilm subreddit? We have an open moderator position.
Nope. Definitely not doing Hey, remember when this movie said that the worst part about shooting a 13-year-old is living with the guilt? There was no punishment for it, apparently. But it was all about the guilt. I remember that. Now, buddy, I remember that. So after convincing LA to shut off the power grid as a power play, which is really funny because they're like, oh man, they're probably pissing their pants right now. As they, you know, as we get the shot of the bank heist group, you know, they got their mythical seventh lock, and it turns out it was an electromagnetic field, and them shutting off the power shut off this electromagnetic field. We get to see them loot the entire safe, and this is all synced up to Ode to Joy. It's so funny how ill-prepared literally every single one of these law enforcement agents are. The politics of this movie are very, very interesting. You know how I say action movies enter the rest of the movie part of the movie? Well, this movie is 2 hours and 12 minutes long, and it's in the rest of the movie for like an hour and 45 minutes. Like, I could recap everything that happens, but I respect you. It's shooting, it's fighting, it's catchphrases, but most importantly, it's the media causing nothing but damage for the McClane family. Like, holy shit, dude. Not only did they leak his name and his familial collection to Hans Gruber via the cokehead saying, oh, come on, John McClane, and then it, like, reverberating through the walkie-talkies and then the news getting a hold of that and then deciding that they need to go to the McClane's house and interview their kids. That exactly happens. They show up to Holly's house and show them her kids, and then they see the portrait of Holly's kids in, like, in a picture frame, and then decide, oh, alright, this is John McClane's wife, all these pieces neatly fit together, and it's all the fucking media's fault for doing that. Like, come on, dude, just do one thing, right? There's a whole thing with a helicopter and the roof exploding, which was supposed to kill all the hostages, I guess? I don't know. But this plays out, and we finally get a glimpse of our guy. The real hero of the story, Argyle. And he slams a limo into the getaway van to knock out the driver. That weird nerd who got really excited about basketball and murder. It's the cleanest, most concise character arc. The man came to John McClane, confused, stumbling around like a baby deer. Learns a craft, driving a limo. Becomes a romantic expert, telling him, you know, go in there, get yourself your woman, and then I'll take you guys back to your place. And then becomes a ride or die, just kind of hangs out in the parking garage the entire time that the building's being sieged. I mean, he was playing his music so loud, he literally couldn't hear gunfire and explosions. But did he leave? No, because he's a man of his word. And he finally has his big coming-of-age moment by ramming into the getaway van and punching a guy so hard that he passes out. Gets knocked out, I mean. I've never been hit before. I don't know how this works. John gets to the baddies and finally squares off with Hans. Turns out, the bomb was to make them think that you're dead. Because in Hans's words, because if you steal $600, you can disappear. But if you steal $600 million, they'll basically hunt you until you're dead. Which, funny enough, he gets to experience. After being shot from a gun tactically taped to John McClane's back, the whole sequence happens, falling through a window. It's great, it's tense, it's good filmmaking. And after unclasping a watch, they let Hans Gruber fall to his death from the 30th floor. And a fun bit about, like, behind the scenes for this scene, I always thought it was great. It's that while they were filming it, they really did kill Alan Rickman. They actually were going to release him on three, you know, counting up like one, two, three, and then dropping him, but they dropped him on two. So that reaction that you see is his real reaction. That was like, I believe, the first take that they got of him. So he actually looks scared to death that he's falling. And I'm sorry, you can't act that way. You gotta kind of do just a little bit of emotional abuse to get a good performance out of somebody falling to their death. And then there's all this sappy Christmas shit that makes you feel good, and I don't care, and that's Die Hard! Wait. Where'd he go?
Who?
The guy that... I mean, you cornered him. All I did was come over and try to explain a movie to him. It's a normal behavior you can do at a party. It's just... Man, I... You know, he was right here. Like, I... When do you think he got up? Fuck. I was about to bring up the fact that this upcoming Thursday is going to be, not Thursday, this upcoming Friday, Christmas Day actually, is going to be me releasing a full table read, radio play, of Joker if it was a Wes Anderson movie. I mean, that's going to be coming out on Christmas Day, and now this man doesn't know. I mean, me thematically announcing this kind of feels hokey. But I'm committing to the bit. I'm extremely tired. I still have to edit this tonight. I don't know how I'm going to do this. But that's coming out on Christmas Day. And now that he left, our beautiful man who's been the central driving point of this debate won't even tell us who won. I guess that's a thing that you would care about during this. Anybody even care about winning a debate? Sometimes it's just fun to yell. I'm a yeller. I don't want to sit around getting points, being an epic good boy, chopping in all the different sorts of ways that I can run rhetorical circles around you. I just think it's fun to yell about shit. Sometimes it's fun to just be mad and scream. You guys should do it sometime. Next time you see something you don't like, make two fists, pound on the floor, bang your head on the tile behind you, and just scream. Throw a goddamn tantrum. Yeah, you're a 28-year-old balding man, but you can throw a tantrum. You can do it wherever you want. Your marriage won't last too long, because you're probably going to be doing it with your wife right next to you, but it'll feel good in the moment. And that's what matters. I'm so sorry this episode is so short. I wanted to do Die Hard as an epic Reddit moderator, but the more that I wrote it, the more that I hated myself. I hated who I was becoming. So I decided, oh, what more Reddity of a way to end an episode about Die Hard being a Christmas movie than an epic debate that would be on the subreddit cops and film r/cops and film. And man, Die Hard is such a good fucking movie. I wonder if, like, we're in a particularly uninspiring time because of Marvel. But, I mean, like, Marvel's just superhero movies, right? And in the 80s, we had 80s action movies, and in the 60s, we had cowboy movies. This really isn't all that ridiculous, is it? We've always had superhero movies in some way, shape, or form. It's just, what's the form that you prefer it to take? Are you the type who you know, like social conservatism and spurs and boots and going back to when America was great again. Yes, I'm saying that that's what Westerns are. Are you the 80s action movie type, or the more explosions there are, the more that the primal rage inside of you wells up and you start drumming on your chest and imagining that you're an ape swinging from vine to vine? Are you the type that likes to see people that you recognize and you can point at the screen and go, I know that guy, that was from a comic book I read when I was little. I'm 44 years old, and this is what I do now, is I point up and explain to my date who Deadpool is and show her my shirt and do some of the lines on the drive home. You know, she's already asked me to stop and asked me what I thought about the movie, and all I've done is quote different Deadpool lines that always made me laugh, and she is dead silent. So it just depends on which of the three you fall into. I know the one I fall into. The many more explosions, the more I'd get hooting like an ape. But that's Die Hard. Die Hard plays perfectly in between a very serious thriller and John Woo's Face Off. You can have all the fun of both Heat and Face Off if you just watch Die Hard. And if you ever come up to me and tell me that Die Hard's a Christmas movie and act like this is your personality for an entire season, I will have to excommunicate you from my life. It's gone on long enough. There's so many other movies you could say are Christmas movies. You could say Gremlins. You could say that one scene in Iron Man 3. Those are the only Christmas movies I know of. But you can do this. Nothing is stopping you. And I want you to know, you don't have to be the epic Reddit moderator. You could just let that go. Just watch Die Hard. Just enjoy it. It's a fun movie. It's a good movie. And you should go watch it again. And do note that I'm very serious. The next upcoming episode is going to be a full table read with my friends as voice actors of Joker as a Wes Anderson movie. That is really happening. That is not a meme. Go subscribe to the Mr. Movies Patreon if you'd like to see another one. I have some financial goals that I'd like to hit, and if I hit them, I'll make another if you guys end up liking it. Also, patrons will have access to the full 92-page, 20,383-word screenplay that I wrote for specifically this radio play. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode that's coming up. I'm very sorry that this ended up being so short. I want you guys to know that this Joker screenplay has taken up literally all of my free time. It's going to take up all my free time next week. And man, am I ready to take a little bit of a break. Whatever, play that Run DMC song. Just fade us out. I want to go to bed.